welcome back to the Mind Vector Podcast.
If you're a returning listener and would like to support the podcast, give us a like and a subscribe.
And if you'd like to share your thoughts, leave them on our YouTube, BitChute, or Facebook. So last episode, we began scratching the surface on the relationship between Karl Marx and George Hegel. I'm pronouncing his name right? Probably not. So we ended up speaking a lot about basically how the dialectical method from Hegel ended up translating into, eventually down the line, conflict theory. So the in-between is that Marx spoke against utilizing this the Hegel idea of transformation of mind towards liberty in different ways. He ended up turning that into a more materialistic thing, and that had to deal with the world, which kind of becomes people conflicting over whatever. So, but Hegel's spiritual thing is actually pretty interesting because it sounds almost Buddhist in its own way. Some of the things he said that I read about reminded me a lot of Alan Watts. One great question that was in the video that we spoke about last episode is that the goal is eventually to achieve liberty, to basically get a free mind in a free society. So
sounds about right.
So when I was reading that, it made me actually think of a friend of mine's. We were having some stoner talk, and he has this idea that the universe is becoming aware of itself. And it's kind of hard to really verbalize, but I can kind of see like maybe an argument for it in some of the spiritual religious ideas that Hegel was putting forth, basically saying that it seems like, at least if the interpretation I read is correct, that as the materialistic forms become more and more aware, the consciousness increases and becomes more refined. So eventually you get to the point where everything that's an ideal is able to be constructed in the material world. So I also kind of wonder what the ideal world will look like in these situations, because if you have like a, you know, we spoke about how trying to make everyone the same in society doesn't really, it's not possible. But if we actually did have a society where people were all on the same page, I don't know what that would look like. Maybe we would look like an ant colony or something from an outside point of view. But if that ever did happen, I wonder how it could actually function. Like, how happy would that world be where everyone's just mindful, detached, and just going about doing what they need to do, but at the same time not indulging, having that perfect balance.
It sounds like it'd be kind of a boring existence. I mean, how awesome would it be to be an ant where your programming is predetermined by your DNA and that's all you do?
I guess we would be like more mindful ants, like.
Yeah, but
we would be going against our programming, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, mindfulness, I think, stems from problems. It's like if there's a problem, then you try to overcome it and kind of think about it in a way that, I mean, how can you solve this issue? But if everything is in equilibrium and nothing's going on and everything's perfect, then there's nothing to think about. Everything's done for you. Everything's laid out. I mean, you're just following the plan, the predetermined plan.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. But I would say that mindfulness would actually have to exist as a response to a problem. But I guess it's more so like a direct, being like consciously directive of something. Like making sure that you have the reins on what you're doing, instead of just kind of unconsciously drifting. But
yeah,
I guess I could see that argument too, that it may be a response to a problem, because even on the pleasure end, like that can become a problem. So you need to steer away from that and constantly make sure you're on the right path, so to say. So,
but yeah, we're constant. I think it might have been Plato that said it, that we're always in constant like duel with our instincts, like our cognitive, our mindfulness, trying to subdue our human nature, basically.
Yeah.
So like our, I don't know, like the good angel and the devil on your shoulder,
yeah, kind of a thing. Trying to keep the light and the dark balanced, I guess.
Yeah. So in balance, it's like, well, if everybody's good and everybody's fine, then, and you have this external force in this system that's being everybody in line, then there's never going to be that need for mindfulness. If you know what I mean? It's like external versus the internal.
It would become the norm.
Yeah, it would be the norm. So it's just like perfect equilibrium. So there's no need for like pre-planning or having morals even, because everything's, it's
already
just set.
Spelled
it's
out.
A set of rule. It's all spoken for, predetermined. So where's the morals? Where's the mindfulness? Where does the need of that come from?
Yeah, I mean, you would have them to enact all these things. So you would still have a very mindful society. It's just, I guess I'm trying to imagine what it would look like, because you'd have this pretty enlightened society, and I don't know what they would really do other than just kind of bliss out and fade into nirvana. So,
but doesn't enlightenment come out of a dark period? Like, that's why you have enlightenment, because you glean a lesson out of something.
It does, but this would be like in this hypothetical situation we're making, because I don't ever think we'll ever get to a point where everyone's just like absolutely mindful, or
right,
what, you know, what Hegel was trying to say that we're gleaming towards.
And then he was also saying that we're in constant flux. We're not like a static entity. We in ourselves, we evolve, society evolves, and there's just not ever this point where it's like frozen in time. It's just a constant motion. So even if we did achieve that, I don't think it would last very long. It'd be like a blink of an eye, basically.
Yeah, maybe that's...
Or even if it lasted like 50 years or 100 years or 200 years, whatever, I think there's always going to be something that pops off that kind of disrupts it.
Maybe that's how we become robots.
Yeah, basically, we'll all be drones.
Yeah.
Worker bees.
We'd all end up just like uploaded into some like hive mind conscious, you know, robotic body or something. So... I don't know, maybe that's a different take on, like, the singularity or something. If everybody's all mindful and on the same page, that's just how our species would look if we achieved it. So.
But not interested. I'm not attracted to that at all.
World has to have problems.
It does not appeal to me, no. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad shit in the world, so I guess
that's the thing,
that
though. It's
perspective,
it's,
yeah.
It seems like just... You know, it's delusional, because we'll never, I can't imagine a world where that would happen. And
right.
I think
it's not sustainable.
Trying to make a world like that, I think that's probably something that people are, they fall victim to, is that way of thinking that we can make the utopia, so to say. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the utopias are just a fantasy world, and they're not sustainable long term.
Makes me think of that quote in the Matrix.
As long as humans are involved.
Yeah, somebody's going to come around to mess it up.
Rock the boat.
Yeah. It makes me think of that quote in the Matrix. Like, human beings define their reality through suffering. So, if you got rid of all the suffering, you just wake up. Like, the delusion kind of vanishes. Like, you ever have a dream and you become aware of the dream? Like lucid dreaming, and before you know it, you pop out of it.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute.
So I think that's what probably would happen in that scenario, which I can kind of make sense of it in like a Hindu way, because I've heard Alan Watts kind of take some Eastern religion and phrase it like basically a spark of the divine is in everyone. So if there's God in all of us, and the game is to basically forget that we're not all God, like just fragmented through individual perspectives all over the universe, then once everybody hits that state, that seems to be like the end goal that Hegel would be speaking about here, where we're ultimately free and we can control everything in reality, the dream would end and God would wake up again and be unified and get bored and probably go back to sleep, and we'd have another big bang and the whole thing starts all over again.
Huh.
So.
Oh. Damn, that's deep. Yeah, that's, I never even thought of that. But yeah.
So crazy. That's how I could see it making sense, but you gotta go into a lot of religious thinking as far as like.
But then it would be the end of the game. That's what you mean. It's like,
yeah, that would be the end of the
game. We're all working towards that. And if we one day did achieve that, then what's next?
Well, according to at least what Alan Watts said, he said that basically God gets bored every so often. So he goes back to sleep and he starts dreaming and separates himself. And that's how we get life.
Mm.
We get the material and then we start slowly. The material starts moving around in a way to where it becomes conscious and becomes more and more aware, and as more and more of it starts to wake up, then God wakes up, and then the reality is ended. Then it's time for the next cycle.
Huh.
Very like religious stoner talk.
That's super out there, yeah. But this is, you said it was Hinduism?
Yeah, it's Hinduism. Yeah. So that's why I learned about religion, because it's such an interesting like way to look at the world.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I don't like, you know, I don't put like everyday faith in it. I don't live my life like that. It's just something interesting to think about. It's a fun thought play, but you can also kind of see like the way to pull truth from it. So,
yeah. But aren't we all like on our own personal kind of spiritual journey in a sense? So everybody's at different points in that journey.
Right.
So it would take like a really big sinking up.
For everybody to reach it.
Yeah. Or even if it goes the other way and people stop believing and stop practicing religion and stop working towards their spiritual enlightenment, what happens at that end of the spectrum?
Well, the way Buddhism explains it is basically there's different planes of existence. Mm-hmm. So whatever habits you have in your mind, that's what's going to pull you to different planes. So if you're in one of the higher realms, the ones that are very close to the edge,
mm-hmm.
and by the edge, I mean they're just on the bliss of, like, the brink of hitting enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
You probably wouldn't make it up that high if you really didn't want it.
Right.
So if you were still really just clinging to the delusion and to everyday life, you would just keep going down and down. So that's kind of why.
Up and down, like an elevator.
Yeah, basically. It's like a cosmic or spiritual elevator. So if you became an angel and you decided, you know, I don't want to think anymore, you could just probably just fall lower and lower into the animal realm. So you would throw away that higher consciousness. So I guess it's kind of an interesting thing, because when I think about it, when it comes to the realms that are closer to it, I imagine it's like kind of like a bubble, like a bubbling up effect right before the bubble gets to the surface and it pops.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would say the bubble is kind of the ego, which is a separation of God, which is the, you know, the ultimate reality, the truth, is different forms of religion put it. So it gets harder and harder to conceive of those things.
Mm-hmm.
The further down you are, like if you were I'm going to mess up like marine biology here, but let's say you're like a turtle or something, you know? Well, I guess a turtle's a bad example because they can come out of the water when they want, but
like a deep sea fish.
Like, what do you call those things? Let's say a clam or something like that.
Mm.
So if you're a clam sitting there, you can't really just go up at will. So
mm-hmm.
if people start trying, if the other things that are up higher start to try to tell you about what's above at the next level, it'll just sound like gibberish. So
oh yeah, you gotta be in the right right place at the right time in the right form.
Yeah, and then finally you just dissipate and you become one with everything else. So, and I guess that was kind of what I was thinking about when I was thinking about the religious aspect of what Hegel said.
Mm-hmm.
That it seems like it's more like ideas that are clashing it out through us. Like the consciousness slowly becomes more and more complex. The ideas become more and more complex. And then finally you get clarity. So.
Yeah, but going back to like religion, there's so many different branches. It's like if you weren't born into a particular religion in a whatever your household, and then you have like all these different ones to pick from. It's like, how do you pick the right one?
Well, that's why it takes lifetimes. So
it's like all these branches on a tree. But then, so when do those branches like end up consolidating? At what point?
You know what I mean? It's like you could start on,
because there's all kinds of overlap and get all lost of them. In the way. Yeah.
Yeah, which, like Hegel said, it's important to be willing to retread so you can actually know what the right way is. And I think mm-hmm. that's another interesting like way that these philosophies and ideologies kind of converge linguistically. It's like mm-hmm. they all have this idea of like ascending and a correct path and a way out of it. So, and you know, obviously Marx didn't like this because, you know, he was atheist. I think he was an atheist anyway, I'm pretty sure. But he just wasn't on board with that way of thinking, which, you know, as common most leftists, they're not all that religious. So,
well, you have to kind of be like an abstract thinker too, and it seems like Marx was very grounded in his worldly ways.
Yeah, there was a couple of things that were a little ironic about the whole thing with Marx, because by wanting to maximize freedom, because again, like his idea of, like you said in the last episode, he hated the idea of servitude,
mm-hmm.
but the way his ideas get enacted, they just increase the size of government to where you have the government controlling everything so that you can be free. It's almost it's blatantly paradoxical. So
yeah, it is, because when did material, not even wealth, but just comfort achieve your spiritual enlightenment? He's trying to use the wrong tool to address problem.
Yeah, and it's also contradictory too that Marx and people that fall into that way of thinking are so big on identity groups, like mm-hmm. the conflict thing. Like, you know, there's basically all the social movements, like racism, sexism, hoboism, like non-heteronormativism. So I don't know, there's no like easy word for LGBT, but basically that entire thing, like all of those are just like all these different demographics. So it's weird too, because by saying that only groups exist and that's all that matters is your group identity, that's mm-hmm. another form of control, another form of limitations, because now you have to be this carbon copy for whatever you are. You can't be anything else, and if you are, right. then you're just an outlier. So
yeah, you default to this identity that may not suit you, may not fit you as you evolve, as you grow.
Yeah, and Marx spoke out against individualism, but it's almost like a messed up way of trying to reach the same thing. Like, it's like a backwards course. Because at the end of the day, if you care that much about liberty, all that really matters is the individual. Like, that's the most oppressed, you right. know, to use the Marxist way of thinking. The individual is the most oppressed because it's the most unique. It's
right.
the most intersections of one aspect.
It's the smallest unit of measurement.
Yeah, exactly.
Of a society.
So
whatever is good for the individual is good for the masses.
Basically, and ultimately, that's just leaving people to fuck alone. So, and not trying to go in and control them.
Yeah, I don't like his the practicality of it. It does seem backward, because if you think about the periods where you grow the most is the periods where you kind of have the most struggles.
Yeah.
Not so much the easy times, because the easy times are you're just coasting. You know, you're not nothing's going on except, you know. It's just counterproductive towards that goal. Because if you look at monks, they give everything up. Priests, they give it all up in order to pursue their spiritual goal. So, in a sense, giving them, like, forcing people to take on material goods or benefits hinders that process. And so it forces them to fall backwards on their, you know, their journey.
Yeah, it's like what a video game.
Like, even if they were on their way, then that's done. That's not going to happen. Well, depending on if they take it. I don't know if anybody would reject it. Would reject it.
Who would reject what? Just,
I don't know, like universal income.
Unless they're trying to be deliberate, like, it would have to be like, because, I mean, on average, most people won't reject free resources, but
there are cases. They might if there was a moral reason behind it, they might.
That's what I'm saying. Like, on average, most people don't really think like that, but there are going to be people that are more principled that would, because they'll think more about how this was acquired and they'll reject that.
Like, but even just goods and services today. I know we were talking about Amazon being like really bad for like a really bad work environment in their warehouses. And it's like, morally, I'm feeling less and less comfortable with supporting that company, even if it's to my detriment to my convenience in acquiring stuff. It's like, do I really need stuff that quick, that badly? Like, I can just go to the store. But yeah, just knowing that people are in hard positions, that they have to take those kind of jobs, are suffering needlessly because, you know, they're feeding this machine, this psychopathic machine, and I'm supporting that. I'm like having a hard time morally.
That's one of those things.
But yeah, it does require mindfulness.
to play devil's advocate, though, the alternative is if they're hiring a bunch of like unskilled workers that they can treat any kind of way and make them pee in soda cans, then the alternative is they may not have a job at all if enough people started to protest Amazon. So which one do you, you know, which one do you really do? And, you know, it kind of goes back to the whole, well, using the religious metaphors, is if we knew everything, we couldn't really make a choice. It would be very hard to make a choice, which that's a key thing in this movie I like a lot called Mr. Nobody. I would recommend that to anybody listening. Great fucking movie.
I haven't watched it yet. Go for it.
But yeah, like that's kind of the thing. We can only go directly in that direction because we can't, generally people won't think both ways about it. So I don't know if boycotting Amazon would be all that useful, if it's going to just mess up a lot of people's jobs that are kind of happy with what they do there, or maybe Amazon is capable of paying their workers more that work there, or giving them better benefits, even though they're not as skilled. So
they may, I mean, yeah, if enough people start protesting them, they might, if they know the reason behind it. It's like, if somebody wrote them, I mean, they know what the fuck they're doing, because they're deliberately also, I believe this was in the UK. I don't know if they do that here in the US, but they like intentionally fire people before their like 13 week mark, just so that they don't have to give them benefits. And then they like rehire them later. So they're fucking the individual, which is the smallest unit of measurement. So
yeah,
who's to say that they're, you know, they're, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what, who else is happy if the littlest guy isn't being treated well.
Yeah, and that's true. Like, a lot of people don't have the way of thinking that they don't realize that you actually do have quite a bit of power against corporations and government. It's just, again, we're all divided, so you can't really get people to unify and do anything meaningful other than, you know, like, wear pussy hats in March. It's like, well, that's not doing much, so.
Yeah, if they felt that strongly about it, they would do it, yeah.
A friend of mine the other day said something like, everyone's outraged and it's all over bullshit. And the stuff that's really heinous, no one gives a shit, no one blinks an eye about.
Yeah.
So, but because
people are like out of touch.
Like, oh yeah, you told me the other day that Papa John was on H3H3.
Mm-hmm.
I watched, I think maybe the first 30 minutes or so, but they said that that was a consequence of what happened, at least in Papa John's situation, that after he was fired, the management and practices changed a bit. So now there's been other people that are in the franchise that are hurting because of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're having to shut down stores and stuff like that, all because somebody wanted to try and blackmail him. So, well, I don't know if blackmail is the right word. Extort him. So that's one of those things. But it is... That is a way to change something, though. Like, if you basically vote with your dollar, vote with your resources. So,
yeah.
If you don't want to support something, then that's the perk of being free, is that you don't have to.
Yeah, gotta look into that shit. Gotta look into what you're propagating, what you're involved in. Because, yeah, I'm involved. I'm like, money's going towards that. I'm part of that. I'm part of that guy being treated poorly.
Right.
It's like, what do you got to think about what you want to be a part of and what you don't. So, mindfulness and intent.
So, yeah, and, you know, not to say that people are absolutely screwed if they lose their job, because there's always more ways people can find and provide value.
Yeah, and Amazon's not hurting for employees. There's always going to be somebody in a hard,
willing to take
you
it.
Know, situation, willing to, yeah, fill that position. They have a high turnover rate.
Yeah, that's one thing. It's probably a great question to ask during an interview. And if you ask mm-hmm. it, you may not get the job. But so what's the turnover rate for this position?
Yeah, there you go. Some kind of revolving door shit.
Pretty much.
And that's why? Because they don't treat them well.
Yeah, really. That's actually an amazing question to ask at the end of an interview. So what is the turnover rate here? And I'm sure the interviewer will probably look at you like you have two heads.
Well, a good company would want you to ask questions. Pertinent questions.
That's one of those things, too. Like, a lot of the problems, I feel like they come down to just people being so limited and, well, incompetence, I should say. It's more so an issue of just people being incompetent. So if you get managers who don't really know how to motivate their workers that well, or they're constrained by policies that are above their level, it just trickles down into a system that the companies are trying to get the most out of you for the least. And you're trying to get the most out of the company for the least. So, it's corruption all the way down.
Yep. But, I mean, those jobs have to be, like, soul-sucking. I mean, people were just coming home and just passing out. Like, they were so overworked. Because their standards are just impossible. They're fucking impossible. And it's crazy. Like, do people really need things like that fast? No. I mean, we did fine without it before. Why do people need two-day shipping? It's like, it's not that crucial.
Yeah, it depends on how things goes with the coronavirus.
I would settle for three-day shipping if it meant that the guy, you know, didn't have to run his ass off so bad. And that wasn't going to potentially lose his job over it. It's ridiculous. Do better, Amazon. Do better.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And that's kind of an interesting thing. You see what the left and right divide is. Basically, you know, conservatives are afraid of the government, which the other side of the coin is leftists are afraid of corporations. But at the same time, leftists call basically called the right fascists because the corporations control the government. They can influence politics in such a way. But the conservatives aren't liking a lot of the big companies because they discriminate against conservatives. So it's a knot that seemingly doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, I think overall supporting like corporations and stuff is more efficient and more effective than supporting government. Because government's just way too big to be effective at anything.
Yeah, you don't have a choice with government. Like, the most you can get in terms of choice is just moving to different states or different cities that have different laws. But
Yeah, that's where we're getting all these California
yeah, all these sanctuary cities.
transplants, all these transplants, because of people with some sense that who have the ability to just move, they're coming here. I mean, they have state tax over there.
I doubt that they are gonna vote any differently. Like,
I think a lot
again,
of them
I like the idea of
will.
living around people with the same ideology. I think that basically, I don't know, I kind of think of socialists like locusts. Like, they mess up one area and move to the next. So when it comes to a bunch of Californians changing because the policies are so bad there, I would like to
Yeah.
think that they're gonna leave the policies there, but that's probably not the case. So that's what makes me worry long term about
What's likely going on is that the conservatives who are there have been holding out or giving up, and they're just coming here because they know it's not going to get any better. So
hopefully.
I think that's what the first rush is about. And then, I mean, the holdouts, the leftists that are still hopeful, are going to. They're just going to be sucked dry, and then they're not going to have a choice. They won't be able to. Hopefully, they'll be stuck there. They change their state, start voting red,
Well,
voting out these idiots like Nancy Pelosi.
the conservatives in California, there was one guy I met on Elder Scrolls Online. This dude, he was basically following the whole thing because he lives in California, and over there they want to succeed. They want to divide the state up and make a new California because a lot of the policies are leading to so many, all these issues, homelessness and immigration, crime, all these other things that are a product of how California is being governed. So
Well, that's another thing about creating all these divisive groups is that people are easier to control when they're in smaller groups as opposed to one unified mass.
yeah.
So in a way, it's like they get the immigrants that are coming in and they're telling them if they want to be able to stay in the country, they need to always vote blue. And so they strike that fear in their hearts, and so that's what they do. So they have that group. And so they're never going to think any differently about it because they want to stay here because they're afraid to go back. And then you've got the other subgroups, LGBTs and XYZs. And
Okay.
so
Saw that one
they're going to get.
article about these teachers having to attend some meeting, and the number of letters in it was huge. I can't remember them all, but it was like LGGBBTTIIAA.
Oh yeah, he had to go to that training or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, that went off the rails. That's a
Yeah.
mouthful of gay.
And I think it hopefully, like we've talked about the accelerist movement, where it's like people are trying to speed all this ridiculousness up so that people will wake up, even people on the left, to how stupid it is. Because it's ridiculous. It's getting crazy. So they're trying to speed it up in order for them to like wake up and realize, oh, maybe this shit was wrong. And
I
then
think it
have
only
some
worked
kind
for.
of regression to the mean.
I don't know how that, what that's gonna look like though. I don't know if we'll have like a financial collapse, a second civil war, who knows, maybe coronavirus, get
Take care
everybody
of
back on track.
it.
But it, I don't know. I don't know if it'll really wake people up that much. Because at least when it comes to my liberal friends, I've heard them say some things that are just kind of mind-boggling to me. And obviously for them, what I say sounds mind-boggling too. Like, when they started going on about their fear of companies, I always tell them, like, well, you know, Walmart's not gonna hold a gun to your head and make you shop there. And like, no, they will. And at that point, I'm like, well, this discussion is not gonna go
Oh,
anywhere.
God.
But I don't know exactly how speeding up a collapse will make people actually realize what went wrong. Because for people that aren't all that into politics, it's more so just like the world just changed. Like I always said, the one for leftists, it seems like they just have like a kind of a weird relationship with causality. And I mean, just like the average person, like the maybe not the people that are more into it, but they see things as just happening to them, and they don't connect what led to that point for these things to happen. So if you take something as grand scale as politics, to them it's just like, I don't know, it's like apocalyptic and probably religious in a way, because there's no easy way to really phrase what caused what. So
And I've had some of that too. And my strategy with some of my friends that are leftists, is to bring up an issue that's closer to home. Like, I don't know, the homeless crisis in California, maybe. How do you explain that? It's like, yeah, the weather's nice there, so they move there, but they're not, nobody's helping them. Nobody's getting them better. Nobody's fixing it. Nobody's, you know, it's just more of the same and it's getting worse. And it's not going to get better. Just, I mean, just tell the dude, go walk down the street in San Francisco.
well, a lot of them, their answer would just be that somebody should help them, but not me. And the government should make, you know, some corporation help them. They should make Amazon help them.
They have
That's kind of how
plenty.
they'll think about it. So
They have plenty of money in California. Look at Hollywood. How do they exist? It's like, the fuck? And then they have the balls to lecture the hardworking people on how to live their lives and spare the global warming shit and the ecosystem
gotta
and
eat the
fuck
babies.
you.
The way to save the planet is eating the babies.
Stupid.
that was a pretty hilarious protest. But yeah. Oh, that was another thing. I forgot to bring up the unhappy soul thing. Yeah, so Hegel ended up saying basically the unhappy soul was already one with God and doesn't realize it, which that made me think a lot of Alan Watts, because Alan Watts had a quote about, if you want to keep pretending that you're just poor little me, you'll go on doing so. And
That victim mentality.
there's also another quote he said that was kind of the opposite, is that he was describing like the process of waking up, and he says that once all these things start to fall away, I'm paraphrasing, but once they start to fall away, it shouldn't go to your head if you wake up and discover that you're God. So as far as what God means to everybody, that changes for everything. But it seems like the ultimate reality and truth and liberty, those are always things that are associated with the greater good, like the apex of good, which is what we would call God. So yeah, Hegel spiritual
So, like,
stuff is, it's very dharmic in a lot of ways, or maybe I'm just
yeah.
projected it into it, but I'm seeing a lot of connections here.
I think he was a Christian.
Was it?
Yeah. He's pretty religious. So yeah, that I mean that might have fed into it,
Yeah,
into his line of thinking.
I
But the
mean,
whole the thing that about him saying that realizing that you already know everything or that you already are God, it reminds me of like a study hack. Or not even so much a study hack, but like a learning hack. In that if you tell yourself that you understand it, you will more easily understand it. Like whatever it is, like if you're sitting in class or something and they're going over something that seems complex, because if you tell yourself, I don't get this, I don't get this, I don't get this, I'm trying to get this, I don't get it, you're just repeating that. But if you tell yourself you get it, then your brain kind of opens up just by way of like it's kind of a mind hack. So I think that's interesting because I thought of that years ago.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Teachers like to do that because a lot of learning has to do with your mind state,
Yeah.
which is it's an interesting thing too, because it seems like you learn emotionally too. Like if something is traumatic, it's harder to forget opposed to something that's mundane. So,
Yeah, some kind of
thanks,
connection
nature,
to the
but
senses. Like pe some people like spray perfume or like light a candle when they're studying, and it's like, I don't know. They say that your sense of smell is the strongest sense tied to memory. So that's like another little study hack. But yeah, I was like,
I'll
because
have to
I'm,
try that. That's interesting.
yeah. But yeah, it's like when you catch a whiff of something that you remember, it's like immediately triggers whatever that memory is. I don't know if you've ever experienced that.
Recording. Yeah, I've experienced that. Like, one weird way that I experienced that is I used to have parakeets and a cockatiel. So, I used to keep these bug repellent things hanging from the side of the cage. And they smelled a lot like mothballs.
Oh my God.
So now, whenever I smell mothballs, it makes me think of birds.
Aw. I think those are actually toxic for them. They're kind
Oh,
of sensitive to like
smell.
just even the yeah, and well, even just like the most innocuous off-gassing of stuff, like cleaners and I don't know, random stuff. They're real sensitive. I don't know if you've ever heard the expression of canary in the coal mine.
Right.
They would keep one down there because if there was any funky shit going on that they were gonna have health problems
The
with,
bird
or
would
they needed to
pass
get out of there,
out.
the bird would, yeah, would be down first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
I don't know if
I'm
they were
like,
toxic for him or not. That's a good question. But it was so long ago those birds have passed away, but they're really common. People hang them on the side to keep them away. So hopefully, I mean, hope it's not taking out people's birds.
but yeah, going back to the emotional learning and like having to be open to the lesson, it's like the way that I'm going to sound conspiratorial, but the way that the government seems to create these scenario situations that get people into their fight or flight and stress mode actually keeps them from being able to think and to adapt. So then all they're doing is reacting. So in that sense, I don't think that a lot of people feel free necessarily because they're just busy running and it's all reactive and they're not actually taking any intentional direction in their life when they're reacting to something that was like unplanned for. It was just not, you know, it's not freedom. It's
Yeah.
not freedom of mind or spirit or anything. It's just do or die.
Yeah, and I could see an argument how people can feel robbed of freedom if their emotional state is tarnished. So if
Yeah,
you're in this,
compromise. Yeah.
yeah, so if you're in a situation where you feel pretty shitty, you're not gonna feel free, which again goes back to the whole, socialists and liberals like to put freedom in quotations. But they're also high in neuroticism, so until
But
they
is it
have
because
absolute
they're.
control, they really don't feel that way. So
Yeah, because they're more like sensitive to their environment. I mean, you have environmentalists, right? So if they're sensitive, and that's a very feminine trait too.
care about the
Like, be.
environment.
To just be sensitive,
Oh,
be
okay.
like about everything. And so that's a feminine trait, whereas masculine traits tend to be very like neutral or just not even neutral, but like
Indifferent.
desensitized. Yeah, desensitized, indifferent, so that they keep their level a level head in the face of danger so that they can act accordingly. Whereas a woman or a feminine trait is to be sensitive, be alert, be, you know, reactive. And so that complementary dynamic alerts the masculine, the man, whoever the whatever the role is. It doesn't have to be man or woman. I'm not assigning genders here. I'm just saying the traits. But they are complementary. So I don't feel necessarily that people should be one way or the other. I feel like we need to come together to be able to work better and to be able to like survive. Because we need, if you think of the village, you need the lookout, you need the, and then you need the warrior that's going to be able to act in, you know, when the lion comes.
Yeah, I've thought about that before too. I always wonder if there's like a way to break down like back when people lived in tribal societies out in nature, if there's a way to break down all these archetypes and just to kind of see how they turned into whatever profession nowadays, or even like even with the Myers-Briggs personality type, I always kind of wonder like what would this boil down to. So
yeah, and I think of
the companies that, as well.
Yeah. I think the companies that implement those, they do want like a well-rounded employee base, because you need all aspects of it, not just they may be also wanting to correct for having an imbalance, and they might just want to be balancing that out, hopefully, you know, ideally, if they're using the tool correctly, because that would be like, but it also depends on like what they want, is what they're striving for.
Yeah, or if they're even bothering, like I'm sure a lot of companies, if it's a position that has a high turnover rate, they probably don't care. As long as it doesn't cause any problems, they probably indifferent and just let it go and just keep the lower level people as scapegoats.
Yeah. I don't think, do they test for IQ, do you know?
I heard that was illegal. I heard it's illegal to test for IQ. That's kind of why.
So maybe that's just
That's why we go through college and stuff like that. But college isn't really a good measurement anymore, because if you're high enough IQ, you can just go out and create something of value. You don't need to go through like any type of authoritative institute. You can just do what you want.
No real meritocracy there. But yeah. I guess their Myers-Briggs is just the next best thing.
To,
since they can't test for IQ.
Yeah, I mean, it can be useful. Like, you probably don't want, like, security guards that are, I don't know. Well, I don't know. That's probably not right either. And even then, there's so many things in place to protect them from getting filtered, from filtering people. Like, all the discrimination stuff, like, it's gone to where originally discrimination was just supposed to be, don't presume things that are wrong. To now just don't have any type of idea of what the hell's going on. So
yeah, people are like afraid to even take a stance on anything.
So I would think that it wouldn't make sense to have like a security guard in a wheelchair, but when I was working for that jewelry corporation, that was a complaint that we would get, that basically a third party company that we would contact to send a guard to one of the national retail storefronts. They would be people that didn't make the associates feel safe, because it would be a security guard who had like a oxygen tank with them. So
what?
I wish I was
That's
joking.
That's ridiculous. The, I mean, some positions need just, to have
the things I learned at that job were like, wow.
They need it. Wow.
The world is a mess.
Yeah, that's kind of not effective as far as that goes. But no, you don't want like an agreeable security guard. Right. Like that would not be a trait to want to hire for.
Yeah.
But I can see like disabilities being kind of a hindrance in that position. It's like, really?
But that's the thing, in leftist legal lingo, now you're advocating for discrimination.
They got to have some metrics, you know, some standards. You got to be able to run or jump or something.
Standards are racist, sexist, and homophobic.
Oh my God.
So.
Crazy clown world.
But yeah, we had there was another time where there was a pregnant security guard. So
pregnant?
Pregnant.
Wow.
As in may chase a guy and her water breaks, who knows?
She gives birth right there. She's cuffing.
But,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I was talking about this earlier about the similarities between government and corporations. Cause these are both institutions that make their mistakes. Like, implementing thought crimes in weird ways, which that's what we're seeing a lot of now. People, you know, the whole cancel culture for corporations. When Amazon started getting a lot of flack, one of the things that went viral was one of their union videos. Like, they were instructing employees on how to basically sniff out people that may be wanting to unionize.
Oh.
So, you know, that's
Yeah, I heard they're not allowed to have, like, their cell phones in the warehouses.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's because they're trying to protect themselves from exposure to all the shitty conditions and the way they do things. But
I'm sure it's a benefit. They can always just say that it's for productivity.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Like,
there's that loophole.
I wonder if there's things that jam cell phone signals, because that would be useful for buildings, just to keep one of those so that people are forced to be on their machines opposed to their phones.
Yeah, but it does seem like they use that kind of, like, mental control, because they have people managing them. They get caught, they're fucked. They're done. So that's more effective than implementing, like, taking the risk of putting some kind of jamming device that may mess up, and then all of a sudden everybody's phones work and they realize it, and then they're just there filled. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if they already have that psychological control on their employees, then they're not going to bring their phones in. So that's kind of more of a safe way to go about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
mind control. But it's scary how people just, like, accept
things.
Situations.
Yeah.
Situations that they know are, like, weird and wrong, and it's, like, clearly overstepping boundaries. Like that Ed Bassmaster guy. Did I ever send you his videos? He's like a prankster. He's all over YouTube. I think I might have sent you some. They were pretty funny. But he has this one character he does is, like, he's a smoker. He's called the hacker, because he's, like, hacking the whole time and smoking. And he's, like, really like nasty looking. So he's repulsive just on sight. But then on top of that, he's, like, smoking and hacking and being real social and talking to people and, like, really close in their face. And just, like, all these different situations he puts people in are just hilarious, because their reactions are just to, like, be polite and be nice and be, like, accepting of, like, this nasty character. It's crazy.
Yeah.
People are pretty docile.
I mean, yeah, domesticated people, they'll go with whatever's happening. So,
yeah.
Everybody has, like, different things that'll set them over the edge. So,
there was this one crowd. He was, like, outside of a supermarket, and there was, like, a crowd of, I guess it was a bus of, like, old people, like, just real old as dirt. And the only time I've ever seen anybody call him out and telling him to stop and get away and quit coughing and go away was that crowd of old ladies. They were like, put it out.
It's literally life or death for them.
They give no fucks. Like, when you get old, you don't give a fuck.
That and they're so easy to get sick. So if I don't say anything, I'll die.
Yeah, pretty much.
So.
Yeah. That's how you got to think about it, though. It's like anything can kill you.
Yeah.
So don't take no shit. Don't take no shit.
Don't eat bats.
Don't eat bats. God damn it. Yeah, the coronavirus. It's here. It's in Texas.
We'll be all right.
We'll be all right. We're not Asian.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm wondering how that's going to play out. But life will go on for most people. So, that sounds like insensitive.
For those of us that are left. After the depopulation.
Yep.
So, yeah, stock up.
Yeah.
Don't had be your kids, had your wife.
Don't be alarmist, but protect yourselves.
Yeah. Be smart.
Exactly. Alrighty, so we're getting close to the hour mark, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. So, everybody that tuned in, we thank you. If you enjoyed your time here and want to support the podcast, give us a subscribe and a like. You can leave your comments and thoughts on our YouTube, BitChute, Facebook, or Twitter. And we will speak to you in the next episode.
Hey.